This is Flight Training the Way I See It with Mike Schiffer. And welcome to another podcast of Flight Training the Way I See It. My name is Mike Shiflett, and I'm going to be your host, as I always am, for your monthly video podcast. If you're listening in your car, it's going to be an audio podcast. If you're looking for the hard copy of this, you can find it at our website. If you go to our website, cfibootcamp.com, you'll find a way to opt in for our newsletter. And so this podcast is a video newsletter, so we're going to go through what's in the newsletter, talk about it, and then sort of hit the highlights of what's in that newsletter. And there's other things in that newsletter as well, but these are the main points and the newsworthy items. So that's what we're doing, and we're broadcast from Miami Beach, Florida. That's our headquarters. And we also have a location in Palo Alto, which I'm gonna be at live for the CFI class, which we haven't had one there for a very long time, since September actually, because of the county regulations. So I'll be there in June. I just booked the ticket for that today. So there's that. So let's take a look at the topics we're going to cover for this week so we can sort of wet your whistle, wet your appetite, get you ready for what we're going to do. So the FAA is looking to eliminate expiration dates on flight instructor certificates. Well, that's new. That's about time is what I would say, but we'll talk about that. And then paper versus electronic charts and or handbooks on practical tests. What's allowed, what's not, and what the big conundrum is about that, which I'm going to get into and talk about quite a lot. So that'll be more opinion, but it will give us some stuff to talk about as we move forward with this, because I'm on a mission to correct a lot of this, correct a lot of bad attitudes, okay? So let's go on with that. Next thing I want to talk about is that we have really significant updates to CFI Bootcamp's resources, and we're updating and releasing a lot of those products soon. So if you have some of our previous things like lesson plans, Teach Brief Fly, you have endorsement scenarios, CFI Essentials, those kind of things that we produce. We're changing a lot there. And so if you're within a year of having our product purchased, then you get those for free. We'll do something nice, some upgrade thing for those of you who want to purchase the latest and greatest. If you're Teach Brief Fly, then we don't care how long ago you had it, because we made significant changes to that. And that was a first edition, so there's that. We'll talk about that here in a minute. Then we have some multi-engine flying tips. These are courtesy of Hobie Tomlinson, who knows more about multi-engine flying than anybody I know. He's a DPE in Vermont, Burlington, and he's also a flight instructor there, and he's a SAFE member. And he's given us 10 tips, plus, well, I guess there's 10 or 20. And we've been milking these out, you know, sort of over the weeks, over the months, I should say. And I neglected to put the tips in for the past couple months, so that there's in a previous podcast you'll hear some of the ones. I think it's about three podcasts to go. Anyway, I've got three new ones here for you. We can talk about those. And then if you're interested in teaching a CFI Bootcamp 7-day class at your facility or where you are, we may just have a way for you to do that. So we'll talk about that. That might be add some or you want a business, your own business doing CFI training, and you have a market for it that's kind of built in, but you just don't have what you need. We've got stuff ready for you. Okay, so we'll talk about that. So let's get into the beginning part of it in a second. I guess I should tell you who I am, because that way you'll either decide to believe me or not, right? There's always that. So I started flying in 1984, and then I flew professionally since 1995 onward, and I became a pilot examiner in 1998. I have about 16,000 hours. That's been in the air for about 2 years, 24/7. Which is a little too much of a good thing sometimes, right? And I mostly general aviation airplanes. I have flew corporate, I flew Citation. So I have type rating in that. So there's that. And I did about 3,000 flight tests for the FAA all the way from, I never did a recreational pilot, but I could have. So from recreational all the way through ATP and all the flight instructor ratings, including and all multi-engine as well. So I did a lot of that. So anyway, because of that, and I'm the director of training at CFI Bootcamp, I am very opinionated on certain things. I don't have pet peeves per se, but I like to point out issues or problems in industry and then look at ways to fix them and see why we can't, why we are always behind in aviation, especially in flight training, and not ahead of the curve, right? So there's reasons for that, which we're gonna talk about in that second article I'm gonna talk about. So the first thing I wanna talk about, though, before we get into that, is FAA is looking to eliminate the expiration dates on flight instructor certificates. So in recent conversations from various aviation, you know, groups, the FAA announced that they wanted to eliminate the expiration dates because these are the only certificates that actually expire. Used to be the student pilot certificate expired at the end of the medical, but that's no longer the case. They're unexpired. And so the agency is complaining, you know, well, this is no real reason to have an expiration date. As long as people can stay kind of active and current with information, there's no real benefit to that. And so then what happened was they were looking into that and saying, well, this will eliminate the need for us to reissue certificates that show up to your mailbox. It eliminates the need for someone to review the application or look at it or even whatever they might do in Oklahoma City for it. Or and support for when you didn't get your certificate and so on. So it's a great idea, right? It's good. So the one thing they wanted to initially, they said without really clarifying, was the way they were going to do it was if you were an active pilot, or an active instructor, I should say. An active instructor within the FAA's mind is someone who's recommended at least one person for a practical test within the 2 years that you hold your certificate. If you've done that, then that is renewing by recency of experience, right? So that's kind of fun. And that would be a good way to do it, except for a lot of instructors don't recommend people for practical tests. They might be check airmen. They might do 141 stage checks or end of course checks. They might do just a ton of flight reviews. They may do aircraft checkouts. They're still active, but the FAA can't really see them because there's not a certificate issued. And when the certificate or IACRA is hit, then the FAA knows that they know that it was you who did the recommendation. So there's plenty of people out there. So this didn't qualify in that way. So then that was pointed out to the FAA. And so then what they said was, well, okay, let's think about it for a second. And then the FRC providers, the flight instructor refresher clinic people, went like, well, wait a minute. We put all this money into this thing that flight instructors have to do if they can't renew any other way. And now we're gonna lose all that business because now all they have to do is just recommend someone for practical tests and it's done, right? And so then that didn't go down so well. So then to clarify their position, they said, well, if the instructor can't meet what we said being an active instructor, recommending at least one person within 2 years on a practical test, then they can complete a FRC, a flight instructor refresher clinic. Those will still be valid and we'll accept those. So that was kind of good. So there's, it will still diminish the revenue for the FRC providers as there'll be a new way yet now to keep your certificate valid, but I think a lot of people who no longer teach or do it rarely definitely go the FERC route. So I think there'll still be people there getting renewal by FERCs, right? Flight Instructor Refresher Clinics. So, but the deal here is that you won't have to have a temporary reissued. So all the ACRs, Airman Certification Representatives within the FERC providers, you won't need to be one anymore. It'll just be proof that you graduated, that's all you need. And if you didn't use the FERC and used another method, which would be recommending at least one person for a practical test within a 2 year period, then you just keep a record of that. You don't have to bring it anywhere. There's no certificate action that you don't have to go to the FISDO and make an appointment and show you've passed this many people or whatever it is. You could also renew by a flight test if you want to. Hardly anybody goes down that road. I've done a few, but not many. So there's that. So, you know, how is it going to look? Well, there's first going to have to probably be rulemaking. So I don't know if they can get around this or not, but if they have to go through the rulemaking process, it can take a while. But because this thing really isn't going to affect much, it's going to mostly add good. Only the FERC providers will be the ones who I don't think are going to be happy with the whole thing. Then it'll have to go through a rulemaking process. So it's a change to regulation. And so that can take either really quick, which is not very often, or it can take a long time. So the thing we don't know is when that's going to happen. So, and the FAA doesn't intend to track these compliances with the new rule. They're just a requirement for you to keep a record that you've done it and when you did it and some proof that you've got it. I mean, they can always check the registry, the database to see, if, or IACRA spans and see if you've recommended someone for a practical test or not. But the other side of it, if you took a FERC, you have a graduation certificate. So they're not going to keep that. I don't believe their intention is to keep that as record. It'll just be if something comes up. You have to prove, just like you would for a flight review, you have to prove that you've had one within 2 years, or your current to carry passengers, whatever that would be. So I think that's the same onus of record keeping would be similar to that. But that's what it's going to look like. We'll have more on that when we get a little more information from them, in particular back from legal, which is saying what they want to do or not going to do in terms of setting a new rule, if they can work within what they've got. The next topic I want to talk about is near and dear to my heart, and I'm on a mission to fix this. It's a paper versus electronic charts and or handbooks on practical tests. This is crazy. So there continues to be pushback from certain DPs regarding what's allowed to be used on a practical test in terms of FAA handbooks, ACs, chart supplements, and so on. There's many DPs that insist on paper for almost everything. And I was asked recently to quote any guidance that FAA has regarding this, right? And the only things I came up with were there's an AC that addresses how you can use an electronic flight bag, basically an EFB, to replace paper charts and certain things, right? And so that was already clarified. FAA's position on that's pretty clear. You can do it, right, as long as you do certain things. But in the case of other things, there's no real guidance out there. There's only one other place that this occurs. It's in the ACS. Any of the ACSs, when you look at the checklist to bring for the examiner, it says that, for example, you come down to charts, it says paper or electronic. You've got that. And you look at this thing or that thing, paper or electronic. Navigation log, it says paper or electronic. But when you get down to chart supplements, it doesn't say paper or electronic. So the interpretation is that that you have to use paper. I don't know how it defaults to paper, but that's what it does. Why couldn't it just say electronic and then paper's the one out, the odd man out? Well, it's interesting to me that there's so many flaws in this logic. And so let's just talk about some of the ones that makes it crazy. So you do know that the chart supplements that is printed by FAA, the green book that you've seen, it used to be called the Airport Facilities Directory, the data for that, where it gets printed from, where you get the data to print it from, or where anybody would print it from, is the electronic version that's within FAA. And so ForeFlight and others take that electronic version and they stick it on an iPad. That is the most current data there is. The paper could be outdated. And the paper got printed from that very source, so why is that very source not allowed? You see what I mean? It doesn't make any sense to me. It's like if you were transcribing from hieroglyphics and putting that into electronic, then that's the other way around, right? Or if we're typesetting, I suppose, but we're not doing that anymore. So please, let's just get with the program here, right? Let's not do that. So the other thing is, like, why? You know, what's the reason for this? For example, why does a DPE insist on a manually drawn flight plan using a mechanical E6B, a plotter, and a paper sectional chart? The argument, again, flawed argument, is that the student needs to use the E6B and have the chart and the plotter so they understand the principles of navigation. That's absolutely not true. I can show someone the principles of navigation with just the triangle velocities. It's in the PHAC, in the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, and they will understand how ground speed is affected by wind, how drift is affected by wind, and how those calculations are made, right? That's pretty simple to explain. You don't need an E6B. You don't need a mechanical round circular slide rule to do that. That dog has had its day, okay, is what I have to say. And then the other point, the pilot's never going to use this E6B or paper again after becoming certificated. Never. For example, let's say you want to fly across the country. The entire country. You don't know exactly where you're going to go. Maybe you just want to go all 50 states. How are you going to get the charts for that? What are you going to do? You're going to get them from, I don't know, Amazon, from FAA.gov, and then you'll get them, and who knows how long they're going to be valid for. And then you're going to have to update each one of them by NOTAMs, right, as they come through, right? You're going to have to do that. And what if you didn't get them all, and then you went to a state because of weather that you didn't have a chart for? I mean, it's just silly, right? This is just silly, right? And you can't buy these charts if you go, it has to be an airport shop. How many of those are there left? 10? 20? I don't know. There's not many, right? Or a flight school that have the chart for their area probably. But you don't need the charts in the area because you're already there, right? So you need a chart somewhere else, some other area. So there's that. And so then I say, you know, so if that's the case, right? If the student is all spun up using E6B paper and all this, what do you think they're going to do when they get certificated? You think they're going to continue on flying like that? How about no? They're not going to. There's so many feature-rich things that we can do within ForeFlight and other sorts of things that there's actually disadvantage to using paper, big disadvantage, right? We have ADS-B weather, which we can pop right up onto our electronic flight bag. We've got traffic that we can put up there. We've got, I mean, these are things you can't do with paper, right? So this argument is killing me, right? And I say, so what happened So what happened then to those 5 to 10 hours that it takes me to do cross-country training time that I have to, that I have to spend now teaching a student how to use the E6B, because it's going to take a little bit, right? And how to actually pull it out, unfold the charts in flight, do all that. I'm taking this, to me, I've taken these 5 or 10 hours and I'm robbed of that time. That's time I feel is just wasted time. And the reason it's wasted is because that's not how I'm going to fly. And I have no opportunity in 5 or 10 hours. What do I do? Tell them, here, we'll do that in another 5 or 10 hours. I'll show you how to use how you're really going to fly. It's really like a slap in the face, right? And it's also, they say, well, why do I have to pay you again? Well, yeah, right? But you're really going to want that information. So what do they do? They get their certificate. The very next day, they go by four flight, already have it. And they get a subscription. And then they just start teaching themselves how to use it. Now, all of us who fly with electronic flight bags know that there are limitations. And we know there are certain things that we have to have contingency for, backups for, and even other methods for. We know that. So, but I don't have the time now to show my student the most important things about using 4Flight or using the iPad. They're gonna need to know when they start going. Just as an example, iPads will overheat. So you need a backup. They can't overheat. And you have to know to keep the cover closed. Except for when you need to use it in hot climates or when the sun's directly on it. That's something that's an SOP, that best practices that you need to know. You also have to know that you need a backup, and 4Flight allows you a backup, so you have your iPhone. You have to know how to keep them charged and how to have a separate battery pack that's available to you in the airplane. So there are things like this, and there's just tech there. So not the easy, I mean, it's not just dead easy to use. I mean, it looks simple. It can be simple, but there's a lot of things in there that you're going to have to know how to make a flight plan, how to get a weather briefing. There's plenty of that to do. I would rather spend that time, the 5 to 10 hours, training my student that and showing them the principles of navigation by just geometry and trigonometry or just concept, right? They don't even need that. So there's that. In terms of the chart supplements, aren't we supposed to be flying with current charts? I thought we were. What's the source of the chart supplements? Again, it's the FAA uses when they contract printing services. It's digital, right? Comes from a digital source. Exactly the same source that they're insisting we can't use, right? This borders on being really ridiculous, is what I say. My iPad, I have an app from ASA, the FARAM. It's always up to date. It's up to date as it can be. And if I want it even more up to date, I've subscribed to the Jepson FARAM service, and that will even be more up to date. How about the paper FARAM that you're going to bring to your flight test or your DB is using? How current do you think that is? Do you think it's within 6 months? Within 28 days? You know, the cycle is 28 days. You think it's within 28 days? I don't think so. So I just see this as foolish, right? I think the reason some DPs insist on paper and E6Bs is because it's what they know, right? Many go home after doing tests and do other things, which is kind of normal, and never keep current on what's being used today, because they don't fly, right? They don't fly anymore. All they do is administer flight tests. Now, this is not everybody. I'm just saying to the ones that I'm having little rubs with, right? So I'm trying to get some buy-in here. And those of you, I know some of you are saying boo, or some of you are cheering and probably maybe even jumping up and down in the background. Finally, someone's saying something about it. So they aren't comfortable with this, right? DPs. So continuing education is part of what makes a flight instructor, which they all are. DPs all have to be flight instructors, a professional. So if you don't believe me, look at the Aviation Instructor's Handbook, the new one that just came out here just not too long ago, and look at Chapter 8. It's called Instructor Responsibilities and Professionalism. You can look under professionalism, and what you'll find is continuing education is a component of that. Now, this is amazingly that this section, Instructor Responsibilities and Professionalism, is one of the tasks that's selected in the PTS that must be tested during the fundamentals instructing. During that portion of the test, this task has to be selected. And so I wonder, Mr. DP, if you're really going on with continuing education, if you're ticking that box or not. I always say I fail one. I definitely fail one. So I'm going to give you a pass on the continuing education, maybe. I always fail the language, proper language. No. I don't think I can pass that. Same with the I'm Safe checklist. I want to take a bunch of letters out of that, then I'm good, right? That's just for fun. So there's that. So if you don't believe me there, you can go look in the Flight Instructor PTS, because there's still a PTS for Airplane Single Engine. You'll find it in Area of Operation 1, Task E. So what should be happening? What should be happening is not happening. So what we need is DP standardization from the FAA, not individual FISDOs. and not from the opinion of a DPE, because that's the way they've always done it. There's a group in Oklahoma City. It's an agency, it's an organization within the FAA. It's called AFS 640, and it has that title, Examiner Standardization, DP Standardization. So, you know, why is this? Why is this left? Why does this matter, right? So, because if you hear it from the horse's mouth and take the FISDO and individuality out of it, now you have done what? Standardization. That's what you've done. So why do we let the FISDOs or DPs decide this? This is something that should be standardized. We standardize maneuvers, how they should be done. We have an airplane flying handbook, which says this is how you do it, right? We have that. So why don't we standardize this? So there are no parallels in other industries, like medicine. There isn't one. When something better comes along, they just stop using what they used and train and use what's new because it's better. It's like akin to an anesthesiologist saying that the new technology in the brain wave monitoring equipment that's now that we have, which is, by the way, if you know anesthesiologists, you'll know that they like that because they can see your brain activity. In the old days, they didn't have that. They just had to juice you really hard, right? And then that's why you had bad recoveries and, you know, so it could be a lot more complications. And now they can monitor that. If it's a blood pressure thing, they can give you blood pressure medication. If it's more anesthesia, they can give you that, right? So they can see it. And so it would be akin to them saying, like, you know, that's a monitoring equipment. What happens if there's a backup generator, if the power fails, and if the battery on the unit fails, and then if the other thing fails? What's up? That was my cat. Anyway, that was pretty funny. You got to hear Garfield. Might as well show you Garfield while we're here. So anyway, there's that. I don't know why he had a bad dream. That's pretty funny. Okay, so on top of that then, so they would be like, hey, let's just stop using that. Let's go back to ether. You know, it's reliable, say, you know, that. No, it doesn't make any sense, right? So there's that. So what can be done? Well, I'm trying to convince one of the groups that represents us to take this on and use their connections with AFS 600, which is Certification of Airmen and FAA, and also 640, Standardization, and actually standardize something. We'll see how that goes, so more on that later. Now, we have significant updates to CFI Bootcamp's resources. They're being updated and released soon. So we have been spending a huge amount of time going through all the resources, updating them, fixing formatting, changing formatting, you name it. Some sections have been even rewritten, I wouldn't say huge amounts of that, but there are some. The self-study guide for the online course has been modified to reflect the new aviation instructor's handbook, and our workbook has been reformatted to follow in line with that as well. So let me just run through some changes. Also, Teach Pre-Fly had 1,248 changes that we made. Wow. Fortunately, most of those were minor. We expect to release new versions of these books in the next 2 to 3 weeks in approximately this order. So one will be the self-study guide for the online course. It's realigned to the new aviation FAA handbook. The CFI workbook, again, realignment to the new handbook, plus rewrites and changes to the references and some questions, which they changed some things in the handbook, so we had to do that. Teach Pre-Fly, the instructor edition, there's rewrites, and here and there formatting, typos and grammar, a few rewritten sections, small. I also added some content in the emergency section. The Teach Pre-Fly student companion guide, it's now aligned to the new airplane flying handbook, and it was also a scrub for typos and grammar. Endorsements and scenarios, there were correction to some of the solutions which had a wrong FAR in the scenarios, and we also fixed typos and grammar. The Check Red's Quick Self-Study Guide, which is a really cool book, by the way. It's got a lot of stuff in it. We made corrections to the FARs that you must know, so there are some errors there. We also realigned the FOI flashcards, which some of them were out of order, didn't go in the right space, and we fixed grammar and typos. Flight Instructor Lesson Plans, some new content, and some rewrites, formatting, typos, and grammar corrections. And finally, the new book that I wrote, The Pilot's Diet, is in its first edition. It will be released here in a couple weeks. If you purchased any of what I just said above within a year, you get new versions for free. They'll come to you. If you have Teach Brief Fly Instructor Student Guide, you get copies of that no matter when you purchase them. Okay, let's move on past that, now that you know what we're doing, and you know who Garfield is, to multi-engine flying tips, right? If you join our Power Hour, by the way, which is every Saturday, and it'd be tomorrow in our case, I'm doing this on Friday, tomorrow from, or Saturdays from noon to 1 o'clock Eastern, and you go to our website, cfibootcamp.com, you'll see a red bar at the bottom, or you'll find other, there'll be another way yet to in the resources to opt in. And when you do, you get an email link, you get a Zoom link, and those are free. And we take a single topic and we spend an hour on it. It's aviation centric, usually around a technique, a maneuver, a procedure. We've done so many of them. And a lot of times we'll give away something. And sometimes one of the questions, in addition to an aviation centric question, is what kind of cat do I have? He's an orange tabby, right? He's a very friendly orange tabby. And his name is Garfield. So if you are in the power, you may get something one day here, if you just by knowing that and whatever the aviation question is. So that's kind of funny. We're coming up on our 100th power hour, by the way, which we'll do something really special for that. Okay, let's go back now to multi-engine flying tips. So we're back to releasing 3 tips a month regarding multi-engine flying that will help with technique and safety for both multi-engine pilots and multi-engine instructors. So let's get started on these. And we're gonna do these for single engine airplanes, we're gonna do them for seaplanes and rotorcraft and a bunch of things as the time goes on. So this will be a section we'll keep. So tip number one is performance speeds are always above control speeds. Let me try that again. Performance speeds are always above control speeds. If you don't violate a performance speed, otherwise you don't go lower than that, you won't have control issues. This is why you're instructed to use like VYSE when an engine fails. So you're always above the control speed, loss of directional control speed, right? Two is never fly slower than VXSE. So never fly slower than VXSE unless you're landing or you're an altitude above 3000 AGO and practicing slow fighter stalls. VXSE is the minimum speed the airplane is capable of accelerating on a single engine. So we want to stay above that, except for when we're deliberately practicing those other things. And the third tip is always think, then act. Never just react. So that's an important concept. You have a moments of time when something happens in a multi-engine airplane. So you have to think and then react. Don't just react. Okay, that's the 3 tips for this week. Again, you can get all these things printed or online from us if you subscribe to our newsletter, which is you get at cfibootcamp.com. So you've got that. The last thing is we're very interested in teaching if you're interested in teaching a CFI bootcamp, a 7-day class that we run in your area, or you want a business that can do that. Maybe you're a large flight school, you don't have a 141, you don't have a CFI program and you want one, or you're an independent CFI who has enough business to be able to do 3 to 5 CFIs a month, but you don't have the resources to do it all, then we've got something for you. So what we've got is we've completed our press and play syllabus for a 7-day class that lets any qualified CFI teach our custom CFI bootcamp at their location. It comes with a lesson plan for every hour. It's all online, and you go and you open up. I went into day one. Day one is there. It's a lesson plan for every hour. And when you click on to the day one, you'll see the resources, and they're over downloadable on the right-hand side. You can do it ahead of time if you want. If there's a PowerPoint, it's there. If it's a PDF, it's there. If it's an audio, video, it's there. And then you just click onto it and it will open, and it will save you an enormous amount of time of trying to do this on your own. And the success rate of our ground program is outstanding. I mean, it's diamond certified, you know, it's that good. I mean, if we do flight and ground, our initial pass rate in Miami and Palo Alto, Miami, let's take first, about 93-94% first time pass rate. Right, over how many have we done? Lots and lots and lots. Right, Palo Alto, about a 92-91% pass rate, maybe as low as 90, maybe, something like that. And of those, of all those, the completion rate, they're failing on the flight, not the ground. It's very rare that it happens on the ground, it's really rare. If it does happen, it happened in flight. Someone missed the power of 180, someone missed this, missed that, but the ground, almost everybody gets through, which is the hallmark that we're doing it right. When we can say that, we're doing it right. And we use multiple DPs, not just one that we know. So this press and play syllabus is there. Now, we will talk, we also will provide, I guess, training, not CFI training, of course, that you gotta be a CFI to do it. We'll provide training and support for these classes. And we're happy to share a business model with you, with people or flight schools who have enough of this kind of business or think they can get it. So if you are in a market where there's no flight instructor training going on, but the area is screaming for it, then talk to us. You know, we'll help you get that set up. And if you're interested in that, then email me directly. And my direct email is Mike, M-I-K-E, at CFI Bootcamp, all one word, CFIbootcamp.com, and I'll get back with you and we'll have a phone conversation about what to do, and I'll give you a tour of what it looks like if we need to go further. And so the idea for us doing this is we want to replicate ourselves, but not me doing it or some, one of our CFIs doing it, in major markets around the country. So we're interested in people who have the ability and who want to do it, and who either want a business that they know they can grow or already have a large-ish, you know, business. We'd like to do about 3 to 5 CFIs per month in each location. That'd be kind of the minimum we want to do. If you're just doing one a month, maybe. But anyway, it'd be Phoenix, Los Angeles market, Seattle, that area, Dallas area, Dallas, Texas. We have upstate New York. Somewhere, not upstate, just New York in general. So it could be New York City, New Jersey. Chicago is an area. And that's about the areas that I can, maybe somewhere else in Florida, it could be. Not to compete with our current stuff, but if you're there. So you might be aligned with the university, it might be next door to you. And they don't have a CFI program, or the CFIs just take too long to produce. You know how long it takes us to create a CFI? And when I say CFI, I mean someone who's fully functional. That means someone can take a syllabus and begin teaching a private pilot, a commercial pilot student tomorrow. No further instruction, just standardization needed maybe to your stuff, but can do it, right? So, so this is how long it takes. They have to take our online course. Our online course takes 42 hours to go through. It's lecture, it's got a workbook, it's got things to do, assessment, you have to do that. So that could take some number, it could take you a month, 2 weeks, could take whatever. Then you come to one of our 7-day immersion classes, which is what I'm telling you that you can also do. And that is flights in the morning and then ground all day long for the next a structured time, 6 hours of classroom instruction every day. And then after that's done, the following week, we complete flights, spin training, and more ground and flights to proficiency. And there's a lot to do. And by the end of that second week, you're walking out with a white piece of paper that says flight instructor on it, and you're able to go to work. And the people who we place, the companies are generally very happy because we don't teach to a test. And we'll give you what we know about the DPE in the last day or two of training so you can optimize, and that's fair. But during training, we don't talk about the test at all. It never comes up. Well, it comes up, but we don't talk about it. Right, we'll say, well, we'll get there when we get there. Right now, I need you to understand the content, right? So that's what we do. So if you're interested in like creating that kind of thing, let us know, and we'll definitely get back to you on that. If you don't want to join our power hours, which are every Saturday from noon to 1, then go to our website and just opt into it. We have about anywhere between as low as 50 and as many as a couple hundred people who will show up on the Saturday and do that. We also have guest speakers. We're going to have Gary Reeves on here shortly in May. He's the guy who knows more about IFR than just about anybody on earth. We have SAFE, Society of Aviation and Flight Educators. Some of those guys will come on or girls and talk about a particular topic. And the topics range from everywhere from marketing to how to do 8s on pylons correctly and why it's divided by 11.3. What's the reason for that? The mathematics behind that even. And we've done things on improving landings or how to teach landings the right way the first time. Those kind of things. Visual flying, looking outside and seeing what the earth tells you to do, right? We've done all those things in our power hours. And again, the newsletter, if you want a copy of that or just want to join the newsletter list, then that's also at cfibootcamp.com. And that's all I got for you today. We spent about 30-some minutes, 33 minutes or so, covering everything. Hope it was instructive to you, and I will have the next video podcast and newsletter for you in May. That's it from Miami Beach, and that's it for this episode of Flight Training the Way I See It. This has been a production of Flight Training the Way I See It. News, tips, and opinion.